Episode 59 of This Developing Story. So just a roundup of what I did this week. More of the same, just more code, more React. Like I said, I'm kind of understanding more Docker at the moment. We use a lot of Docker. My CTO has actually came from Docker as his last role. So he's actually a bit of an expert in the matter. So we use it a lot, and I've had an opportunity to use it a lot more. I haven't set up any like Docker containers, but I'm using a lot of like pre-made Docker containers that have been established already. And yeah, I'm actually really intrigued. I'm actually going to hopefully do more research and understanding exactly what goes into a Docker container. But other than that, yeah, just more of the same. Getting really close. Last week I actually misspoke in saying that I was going to open source our repo. We're actually not going to open source the front end React stuff as of yet, but some other things that we're working on will be open source. But I'll talk about those in more detail when they happen. Other than that, I didn't really announce that this change had happened. So I did leave Block as an engineer. But actually stayed on to be a mentor. So part-time, very part-time. I have currently have two students that I meet with while they go through the Block curriculum, which is surreal, I guess, to say the least, because I went through the curriculum twice with a mentor and then once without a mentor. And yeah, so I get to, I guess, pay it forward. I mean, I am full disclosure, I am being paid by Block still to be a mentor. So they do pay all their mentors. But yeah, it's actually a lot of fun, actually, to prepare for these meetings and help people out through more of like a guided curriculum. I guess you could say I've mentored other people since I've started coding, but I've never had any structure to it. It's more of like meeting with people one-off, doing mutual fund, which I've kind of stopped doing mutual fund because I anticipated doing Block before, and I was still an engineer. I was actually planning on doing this when I was still on the engineering team. So the transition actually came in good time when I left Block to come back part-time as a mentor and help people out on the side. So yeah, I'm doing that. So if you are on the fence about Block and or about to take a course and you're looking for a full stack mentor, so front end and back end, mention my name, and I think one of the student advisors can connect you to me through the platform, or you can find me and search me on the during the mentor selection phase. So, but that's enough about me. I'm actually going to be interviewing during this podcast. It's actually Lex Alexander. He's actually a guy I've actually found through Twitter, I think. I'm not sure if it was specifically from Code Newbies or not, but I know I found him. I'm not sure. He might have been involved in that or something like that. But Lex is actually interesting. He actually went through a boot camp, but his story is a little more interesting. He actually had a blog, Coding Comedy, which came out of his background as a stand-up comedian that he did for a bit of time outside of college or maybe during college. He explains more in detail in our interview. But yeah, he basically crowdfunded his way into a boot camp. And I think he's one of the first, he's not the first person to do this, but he's one of the first person on the internet that actually saw do this and be successful with. So Lex is also an engineer at Colab in LA, working with some creators, similar to what the same thing that I did in IZEA. It was in the social media space and connecting people who create YouTube content and Vine content and et cetera. So actually interesting company, link in the show notes. But without further ado, I'm actually going to let you guys hear Lex's interview.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lex. Currently a developer at a company called Colab in downtown LA. I got into development kind of out of necessity. It's not something I actually thought I would ever do. But a few years ago when I was in school, I tried to start a Craigslist for colleges, and I was that typical business guy saying I had a brilliant idea. I just needed a developer to build it for me. So I ran around to every major school in Southern California pitching to developers, trying to convince them to join my team, say, hey, we're all going to be billionaires like Mark Zuckerberg. I just need you guys to build this product for me for free. So eventually I found a developer. He built out the initial prototype over 14 months, and then he just decided he wanted to do something else. And so many of like the deals I had with Pasadena City College, where I was at the time, kind of fell through. And I tried to outsource the work to India. I tried to find other developers, do other partnership deals, and none of it really panned out. So I said, screw this. This is at the height of the recession, 2009, 2010. I said, I'll try my hand at stand-up because I thought I would be the next Dave Chappelle. Tried my hand at stand-up, and then the economy kind of bounced back, and I tried to start another tech company, which is almost like an Apple Pay for teens. So with a little gamification in there, built an amazing team as well, smart business people, a guy that was head of design at Visa, Visa, and overlooked their prepaid debit card division for teens. And so I just needed another developer again, run into the same problem, try to find more developers that I could partner with or that we could partner with. And again, it was just very, very difficult. And so the project really never came to fruition. And after that, I did some soul search and I said, well, I guess it's time for me to actually learn how to code. It's something that I didn't actually think I could do because as a kid, I was interested in computers. And I even joked to my dad one day and my aunt that I would be a hacker one day and probably get caught by the CIA or the FBI. And then I had a relative interject and say, hey, you know, you won't ever be a programmer. You're not good at math. So it's not something I actually took seriously as a kid. So after the second company didn't really take off or even come to fruition, I said, I'll take this program thing very seriously and I'll learn how to code. And that's when I went to Hack for LA in 2013. I just didn't know how to write any code, any HTML at the time. And I partnered with a woman by the name of Chico, and we built an app, which is called Map My Snaps, which basically showed you all the places in Boyle Heights that accepted food stamps and WIC. She wrote all the code, basically, and I just gave her all the JSON for it. She populated the map, and we actually won third place for that that app. And shortly after, a developer by the name of Scott Mott that was at SendGrid said, hey, Lex, I actually believe in you. You should take this programming thing very seriously. And so I tried some self-studying via Code School and with Code Academy. But then Scott at the time recommended doing a coding boot camp, and he recommended General Assembly specifically. I looked into GA, and I found out that it was a great, great program, great people, great environment, but I didn't have the full tuition to pay for it. It was $12,000 at the time. And so I tried a bunch of different ways to raise the money. Tried going through loan sharks, borrowing a loan, credit card debt, whatever. But none of those panned out. So I figured that I would crowd for my tuition. And in return for people that backed me, I'd plan to pledge 10% of my income for 2 years as a software engineer to help send another person of color or another underrepresented individual to a coding boot camp as well. Got a bunch of press in Business Insider and Fast Company. Completed the program, and about 3 months after completing the program, I got my first development job at a company called Oclassificado. And that was maybe close to 2 years ago almost now.
Nice.
And I've been doing developing ever since.
Yeah, so like just to scroll back just a little bit. So you actually approached loan sharks too?
Oh, that was, I was just kidding. No, okay. No. Okay. I wish I knew some loan sharks.
Yeah, so that's actually pretty awesome. So your past two companies that I guess didn't pan out, did you ever think about going back to, I guess, starting your own thing?
Yeah.
After you had the skill set?
I do. But it's funny with once you get into a relatively good place or you actually think you're good at something, you start telling yourself, well, I'll do it again in the future. But programming is just fun. I could do this for another 30 or 40 years. But yeah, I mean, hopefully one day, maybe the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
I want to become the Black Steve Jobs.
Yeah, I had a similar, not trajectory, but I had an idea. Basically, why I got into programming is because I had an idea for an app.
Yeah.
And I figured, oh, I'm going to learn how to do it, and let me do it. So I learned how to code. I made the prototype for the app, and then I realized, man, this is going to be harder than I thought.
Yeah.
And at that time, I realized people were actually getting paid for this. So I figured out, let me just get a job doing this. I can learn a lot faster.
Yeah.
And now I'm at the point where, like, I know what the work that goes into making an app, that not that I don't feel like doing it, but I don't really feel like starting in my own app and, you know, possibly maybe getting VC funding or doing it on my own. So yeah, I'm just kind of like, I'm at the point where I sort of like you, I think maybe in 3 to 5 years I'll revisit it. But at the moment I'm kind of enjoying what I'm doing at the moment.
Same with me. That was the great thing about youth though, like being 20, 21, and I didn't know how difficult something would be or could be. So I would just tackle it with reckless abandon. But now, like, knowing the amount of detail, amount of design, and amount of, like, man hours or woman hours that go into developing and building something that's robust is really makes you question if you really want to do something on your own, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so as far as the market for developers in the, I guess, the greater or downtown LA area, you found that, obviously, you found it hard to find developers. Like, what sort of avenues were you looking to connect with developers?
When I was trying to start my companies?
Yeah.
A few things. I would post ads on Craigslist, primarily, saying I was looking for a rock star ninja developer, just copying the verbiage I saw online.
Yeah.
Or I would go to schools and post up flyers looking for developers, or I would personally look up the computer science professors and pitch to them, saying, hey, my name is Lex. I have this brilliant business idea. Do you mind if I possibly come by and just pitch to your class? I'll get you coffee or lunch or something in return. So those were the three primary ways.
Did the last one work?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. You never know what you can get until you ask.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool. It's actually a great idea. Yeah, I recommend everybody try that.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know if you've hit the well too hard. Maybe it's all dried up at the moment.
I think they all forgot now.
Yeah, it's cool. So when you did your first two tries at those two other companies, what code, or I guess what stack were you guys using to get the product off the ground?
PHP, and I think some JavaScript and some regular just HTML, CSS, from what I remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then when you finally learned how to code, what did you end up going with?
First I learned Ruby and Rails, and now I mostly just do JavaScript.
And that's what you do JavaScript day to day at your current company?
Yeah, it's maybe 70% or 60% JavaScript, React, and then maybe 30 to 40 Ruby.
Cool. Would you consider yourself a full stack developer at the moment?
You know, it depends on how much coffee I had during that day.
Yeah.
If I had enough coffee, I'm going to say, yeah, I'm a full stack developer. I'm a full stack god. But I'd probably have to say I'm more front end because I've gotten really good at it lately.
Yeah.
And I dabble in back.
Yeah. What's really, I guess, unknown. So I consider myself a full stack developer. But at my last job when I worked at Block, I was definitely a full stack developer. I could write back end. I could write SQL queries. I could do whatever. At my current job, I'm a front-end developer because their backends Go and C++ and Mongo, which Mongo is not that too hard, but when you combine it with like all these other Go services and injecting that into Ruby on Rails, which is kind of non-conventional, I retreat to the front-end in most times.
It's funny that you say that. One of our developers at Collab, Yak, he basically rewrote all of our financial systems and he's basically just doing raw SQL queries for stuff. And it's just this complex logic. And I was looking at it and I said, you know, this would probably take me 6 or 7 months to actually understand what he's actually did here. But it's just, it's brilliant when you look at it. And I said, you know, I'm just going to go back aligning divs on the front end or something, you know?
Cool. So going back to the press that you guys had, or that you had personally to get into programming, have you, I guess, followed through with the second half of that, like putting someone else through a boot camp or whatnot?
Not yet, because the first job that I had developing, I didn't have the expected salary that I thought I would. So I thought it would only be fair to do it once I made the money that I actually thought or that I wanted to make, so I could properly allocate the amount that I wanted.
There usually is some sort of, I guess, compromise in getting in.
Right.
So I think a lot of people have to realize as they get into programming that you might either have to take some sort of salary cut, maybe lower your expectations, or take a job that's lesser of what you thought it would be. So a lot of people now, I've noticed, are taking QA jobs over an actual full, like, development job. So, yeah, it's funny you say that, because I think that's actually pretty common for most people.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like the whole coding movement, or learn to code movement, we see these commercials with the dogs running around the office, and they'll say you can work at Google immediately, but very few developers that I know actually work at the top tech companies immediately for their first job or even their second job. So sometimes you just need to get your foot in the door. And once you get your foot in the door and gain experience, then you can level up and then go to these much larger tech companies.
Yeah. And it's crazy how much like 1 year of experience will make a difference.
Yeah.
Because once you learn how to like, it's different doing a boot camp or learning on your own, because you're basically working on your like your level. So, like, you solve your problems, but when you start working on a team and working on a product that has users, you start working, like, it's basically a different level. So, that first year is, like, it's unreal how much experience you get in that first year as opposed to, like, 5 years working on your own. So, yeah, it's good to note that.
It's funny that you say that, because at my first job, I was basically the only developer working on the project that I worked on. So, I had to do everything from front end to back end to actually provisioning a server from the ground up, because I didn't know anything about tools like Chef or automating servers. And so, I learned a lot in that experience, a lot about just many different things.
Yeah, that's a good skill set to have too.
Yeah.
Like I said, my last job, I did a lot more. I actually started a lot more back-end and DevOps stuff at Block, because that's what we needed a need for. And by the time I left, I was doing all front-end stuff.
Yeah.
And I basically just kind of scaled everything that you could actually touch in there, I touched, aside from like building up like large SQL queries. We didn't really have a need for that, and someone was actually already doing that. So,
yeah.
But other than that, yeah, I got to touch a lot of things, and today it's just about the same. Even though I say I retreated front-end, I just set up a RabbitMQ server a couple days ago, I think Sunday night, and I'm doing some other like weird backend things that I just have to do once I come across it. So, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, that's one way to get rid of imposter syndrome. Just keep doing things you're unfamiliar with.
Yeah, so I'm glad you're on the podcast and I'm able to talk to you and find out more about your story. But I had a question for you, because between you and me, you're actually my first Black engineer.
Oh,
as
wow.
A guest, aside from myself. It's weird because even though I'm in NSF, I live in Oakland, and you know, I basically attend a lot of events. It's extremely hard to get a Black engineer to talk to.
Yeah.
So though I do actually have a couple, I actually have a guy I'm talking to after you. And so you won't be the only one once this goes out. But I was going to get your opinion. Since you're down in LA, it's a bit different from SF. What's your experience as far as diversity and running into other programmers of color?
Oh, it's probably as rare as an SF. I've gone to many hackathons. I've mentored, and I can probably count on one hand how many times I've seen developers of color at any given event. And when you do see them, you go up and say, "Oh, hey, how you doing?" It's almost like you do the universal head nod between people of color. Yep. You know, you recognize the struggle between each other. But yeah, it's about as rare as an SF as well.
Wow. Yeah, that's unfortunate too, because like, so like, there's all these like the big talks about diversity numbers and stuff like that. But when you go to these, like, I go to, like, I guess I'll just drop names. I go to, like, Twitter, and I go to, like, you know, Heroku or whatever, and I go to these events in there, and it's like, oh, yeah, you guys do have people of color. They're doing security.
Yeah.
You know, that's, like, it's so common to, like, you know, run into them, talk to them. Like, I was just at Pinterest last week, and I was talking to the staff there, I was like, hey, what are you doing? You know, what do you like? What do you think about this? Why don't you learn how to code? Like asking them questions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mind boggling, but I think it's getting better.
Oh, yeah.
We have more boot camps. You know, we have just down the street from it, we've got the Telegraph Academy, which is a boot camp specified just for people of color. It's under the Hack Reactor brand. And they actually are doing a good job. They're putting out some pretty skilled engineers. Unfortunately, you know, they only have like 20 people in a cohort.
Yeah.
So it's whoever, I guess, finishes. I mean, it's a hard program. So if they do finish, it's still a small number compared to, you know, the 480 other ones that are coming out of the other boot camps in the same like 3 month span. So, yeah, I just find that interesting. I wanted to get your opinion on that. Do you attend a lot of meetups locally down in the LA area?
I used to a lot. I haven't really attended that many recently. I usually go to JSLA, which is once a month, or I used to go to this Ruby on Rails meetup here in Glendale or Pasadena area. But can I go back to your point about the diversity thing one more time?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is why, because I don't see that many people of color in tech, this is why I always try to personally go out to tech events and mentor as much as I can, especially to other young people. Like my buddy has a nonprofit that teaches middle school and high school students how to program, and called HackerFun. And I try to go out as much as I can to mentor. So if I run into any people of color, they can say, he's a developer. He actually is doing this as well. If he can do it, then so can I. Because I wish I would have seen that as a kid, and I had that validation there, because I didn't see anyone growing up that looked like me. And not saying that you need that, but it definitely helps.
Yeah, it definitely does. Because, yeah. Like, to your point that you brought up earlier, that you had an interest, and you had interest to become a quote-unquote hacker. I myself was, like, always on computers. Like, I got my start with playing Doom and Wolfenstein, and doing like C run and then win and then, you know, running Wolfenstein or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I got my start on computers actually pretty early, and I was in the Gifted program working on Macs and doing Lego Mindstorm and stuff like that. But for whatever reason, like, computer science was not on my radar. My goal was, like, I got a scholarship. I went to college and got a finance degree. And turned out that didn't work out because you have to know somebody to get your start in finance.
Of course.
Which I didn't know anybody. but if I knew computer science would have been realistic for me, I probably would have chose that. But it just wasn't. I guess growing up from a single parent household and a black family, you try to always do, well, I speak for myself. I always wanted to do something that was safe, something that would actually make me successful. So I went into business because, oh, let me just learn how to do business so I can get a job, make money, and not be poor or not be struggling paycheck to paycheck like my parents did. So I always went the safe route. Computer science didn't seem like a safe route for me, and it wasn't on my radar because I didn't know anybody who went through that growing up. And I think if I had people like you who were showing up at these events and stuff like that, I think I probably would have had a different outcome. But yeah, I try to do the same. I actually haven't done a bad job of it since I moved out here to the Bay Area, but there's definitely a ton of organizations here in Oakland that do something similar to that too.
Yeah.
Awesome. So explain to me your day-to-day.
Get in probably between 9:30 to 10. We have stand-ups at around 11 where we just talk about what we're working on, anything, and if we're having any blockages or need help on anything. And then the problems that we're going to tackle for today. After that, probably work until 6:30. I mean, it varies. I mean, what I'm really working on now has been this large project, which is basically this compilation maker. Because we're a digital creative studio and we partner with a bunch of social media celebrities, we make a bunch of those famous Vine compilations that you see, the funny Vines and fail Vines. And so, like, we needed a way to track all of those, all the videos within the compilations that we make, because we have a claims team that actually has to sit there and watch all those videos, which can be an hour to 2 hours long. So we wanted a way to, our creators to go in and be able to manually enter all the videos that are attached to a given compilation. That way our claims team can say, okay, I don't have to sit here and watch this for 2 hours at a time. I can just view this list of videos that are in here. And I know what's in here, and it makes that makes tracking it much easier. So I've been working on that mostly for the last 2 months now, just adding a bunch of features to it. So yeah, probably when I'm done with that, I'm not sure what's next in the pipeline. Probably some more front end stuff, but that's probably been my major project. It has a bunch of cool stuff in it. Like you can download YouTube videos through it. I'd have to show it to you.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll take your word for it. Actually, I'm going to look into, if you do me a favor, send me an email of your company, because yeah. I've actually never heard of it, but it sounds a lot similar of my first job over at IZEA in Orlando.
Okay.
We did make compilations, but we enabled people to do the same for their personal, like, Vines and YouTubes and Facebook posts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. It's definitely an interesting space, this, like, sort of, like, creator market and, like, people just, not sort of like getting famous, but like making a name for themselves in social media. It's definitely an interesting play.
Yeah, social media is very interesting. It's funny because outside of probably work or even the media world, I can't mention to, I can't tell my relatives, say, hey, you know, Baby Ariel or King Batch came in today, and they would have no idea who that is. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, so you guys... Yeah, you mentioned Vine. I didn't even put two and two together. So you get all those the Vine guys
Vine,
coming through?
Vine, Snapchat, Musical.ly, or they're called Musers.
Yeah.
Basically the entire preteen to teen market.
Okay. And I know, so Snapchat's out there in Santa Monica. Do you guys connect with them a lot?
Not directly, I don't think. But we have...
Were you guys like in the same circle?
Yeah, we're in the same circle though.
Okay. Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, I watch all those... I guess for a while there's like, I guess still going on, all these Black Viners.
Yeah.
Yeah, I follow those guys. King Batch, all his friends and stuff like that. They're hilarious. My son actually watches them with me.
Yeah.
Most of them. Some of them are, I gotta double tap through.
With the Vine, it's funny how you can get sucked in because it's only a few seconds and then you look up, it's 45 minutes have passed and all you've been watching are Vine comps.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. We used to... It's actually sad. We used to read books before bedtime.
Yeah.
And we just Vine and watch Vines now.
And read the comments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So you mentioned it, I guess, briefly in passing. You tried your hand at comedy?
Yeah.
Are you still doing that locally or anything like that?
I haven't done anything for the last 3 or 4 months. Tried my hand at stand-up and improv for 2 years. Improv, I was... I could never really turn my funny meter off because they always said the funny was supposed to come from the scenes, and so I could never just not say something funny because that was just part of who I was. But I noticed I was much better at stand-up because I could get up there and tell a story and bring people along and hit them with a good punchline. So, but I haven't really done it recently.
Do you have any of your stuff on YouTube at all?
No, I took a bunch of it down. You never know. I might want to run for president one day.
Yeah. Well, I feel you. Makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
They come out with some weird stuff when you run for politics.
That is true.
Anyway, we won't get into details, but Oakland politics is quite interesting.
I can only imagine.
Awesome. Hey, well, Lex, I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks,
man. And sharing a story. Hopefully, people will connect with you on Twitter. Remind me what your Twitter handle is.
At the Lex Times. So it's like the New York Times, but Lex, the Lex Times.
All right, cool, man. Hopefully we run into each other eventually. We're both in California. I used to go to L.A. At least every couple months, but I haven't been down there in a while. But
it'll happen. Yeah. You can't cheat destiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right, man.
All right. Thank you for having me.
And I'm super happy he was on the podcast, super happy I was able to interview him and find out more about his stories. Actually, I was, the word more impressed, it seems condescending, but I was actually really impressed with his background with actually trying to start a company, something that I thought of doing, but never really followed through with originally getting into programming and actually just went the whole career route first. And yeah. super awesome. Hopefully you guys will follow him. Lex Times on Twitter, and he's also on Medium too. I'll have links in the show notes for his blog as well. But with that being said, I've alluded to Lex being my first Black engineer interviewee, and I've actually got a couple more actually lined up just after him, which is going to be pretty awesome. More people of color, something I've really focused on trying to get people of color on the podcast, with me being a one person of that space. But I've actually had a bit of difficulty trying to confirm and getting people on the show. Luckily, the next handful of guests actually are going to be people of color. I think I've done an okay job of getting women on the show to kind of keep the interviews pretty diverse. And hopefully, and continue on, I'll still keep it just as diverse, but also hearing from even, you know, I think people who are established in the space, you know, back before diversity was a thing, I think there's a lot of value from hearing from them too. So just overall, I'm just trying to keep the interviews diverse. So people who have lots of experience, people who have very little experience, people who come from different technologies even. I think I need to get more iOS and Android developers on here. That's something I haven't done. I've toyed with the idea of having designers on here, but I liked having the niche of just programming for now. So we'll see. But coming up, yeah, a super awesome lineup of guests coming up the next few weeks. If you want to keep up to date, follow me on Twitter at BayDougieYo, and also subscribe to the podcast, developingstory.link, and also Just Developing Story on iTunes. With that being said, I will talk to you next week.